Yeah, the powdered soaps, all of that. But again, for me, I go Coast, and you can't even find it anymore. That's what upsets me is,
yeah,
like,
I can't remember the last time I seen it.
You don't see it anymore. Like, if you look for soap for men, it's essentially, you've got, I think, like, Lever 2000, you've got Dial, and Irish Spring. Those are the ones that are...
Oh, there's also Dove for men.
Can't use it.
Really?
Yeah, it Dove is got too much moisturizer in it, and it makes me break out horrible.
Oh, you know? Interesting.
So, I mean, not even just my face. Like I'll find, like, you know, even on body parts,
just clogs your pores.
It just makes me feel greasy.
I don't use any of those.
What do you use? Fucking Rock.
Rock, what are you using? I have a combination of stuff. It just depends on my mood. But Duke Cannon, got a couple of really nice smelling bars from Duke Cannon. What's the one that's escaping me? Cremo makes a liquid body wash that I
again
really
though
like.
I can't I don't know, maybe it's just my age, but the idea of a body soap, you know what I mean, like a body lotion type soap or body wash.
Oh no, it's like a clear soap.
Yeah, but it still can
get a nice scent.
Like the worst
but
thing.
Usually I use Dr. Squatch,
like in Sasquatch.
Yeah, Dr. Squatch. She's fucking amazing.
Well, I mean, it actually makes sense for you considering how fucking hairy you are. Jesus Christ.
Even Tiff loves it.
Really?
Yeah. She gets the fresh falls, and she's like, the soap is amazing. My skin feels so good afterwards. And I'm like, yeah.
Well, that's our soap review. And now these words from Sweetwater. Oh, wait, they're not here. So... For as much as we love Sweetwater, and specifically for as much as we love Chris Smith, they're not being interviewed, and they're not sponsoring, but we still love them.
Were you just watching me, like, while you were talking about Sweetwater?
Yeah, what were you doing?
Did my camera move?
No.
No?
No.
I just felt the entire RV go.
I wondered what you were looking at.
I was like, what the fuck? That is like, it usually happens at night. It'll be 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'll feel like, what the fuck?
No.
And I'll run outside, like, you know, expecting to see a bear scratching its back or something on the RV, but nothing. I told you I heard knocking at night, right?
Yeah.
A couple of times.
Yeah.
And so did the guy behind me. Like trees knocking.
Do you have a lot of bears in that area?
I have not seen one.
I mean, like, do you know if historically they have bears?
Oh, yeah. There are bears somewhere. But I had that big rock that landed on top of the RV top.
Right.
And
for those who don't know, you're doing all of the podcasts remotely from your RV.
Yes.
You guys live on the road.
Thank you, Sweetwater.
Yeah. Thank you, Sweetwater. Thank you, Chris Smith at Sweetwater. And again.
Chris Smith. Is that his name?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He's the guy.
That's a step below Joe Smith.
But, I mean, look, like I said, and I'll keep saying it. This dude is the hookup. Everything that we've got as far as equipment. He even talked us out of equipment, which you don't usually hear a salesperson do. So
that's called integrity.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why, like, even though I wish they were sponsoring us, and even though I would love to, and maybe we might be able to hook up an interview with Chris, fingers crossed. But these guys really, it's very rare. You know, I'm not somebody to sing praises unless I've really got something to say. And God damn, this company just keeps coming through for me. They're on point every single time. And Chris is, you know, leading that charge of being on point. So I gotta hand it to him. But with all that being said, there's a lot of things going on in the news, a lot of interesting articles.
Very interesting.
It's just a ton going on, you know, even on a slow news day.
Can you read to me once again that Daily Beast headline?
Oh, the Daily Beast. Okay, so this is like, you know, recently. It just killed me.
They deserve a raise.
Daily Beast, whoever came up with this headline, definitely deserves a pat on the back and a star on the forehead, because it says, even moms for liberty are tired of moms for liberty.
Yes. A lot of the groups have been disbanding and imploding.
Apparently. And I'll be honest with you, I haven't followed the story, but this headline, it caught me. It just caught me just right. And it just made me crack up. Even moms for liberty are sick of moms for liberty.
In the story that I read,
or it tired.
Said that in December, they had a basically a potluck, a dinner out.
When was this?
As a meet, December.
Okay.
And out of the expected 20 or 30 people, 3 showed up. And the one lady was like, you know, we're all about the stay-at-home traditional mom, the trad moms.
The whole trad wife and trad involved, mom.
But apparently they just didn't have the time anymore. So she's telling me that there are better things to do, like sitting at home, than to show up for Moms for Liberty, which is very ironic, the name Moms for Liberty, since they're trying to take away certain liberties.
They were the ones that were behind a lot of the book bannings, you know. Yeah. And we did an episode on book bannings and all the different bannings and wars, you know, cultural war stuff. But Moms for Liberty has spearheaded a lot of the book bannings, apparently. And again, I don't want to speak out of turn here, because
my watch, sorry.
I literally felt like when Moms for Liberty came around that it was a flash in the pan, you know. I'm old enough at this point to kind of go, okay, here's the new group that everyone gets all excited about, and then something happens and it just falls apart because it's not a very strong structure. So
why is it that there are so many groups that have the word liberty or something related to the revolution, but they're the ones trying to take away the ability to do something?
Well, that's always why the case. Is that? I mean, that's always the case, though, isn't
the
it?
Tea is Party, the Moms for Liberty. Give me a break.
Yeah, well, again, it's one of those things where, like, they go away, but they always come back in some different form. So, like, you saw the Tea Party basically fall apart, and that was a very, very strong institution. But you saw them fall apart and get replaced, essentially, by MAGA, right? And yeah. They're all kind of...
Maggots.
Yeah. They're all kind of coming from... The like when you look at it institutionally in Congress, it they fall under the Freedom Caucus. And again, that's another example of using words to try to make a point that kind of goes exactly against what you're about. So Moms for Liberty were taking liberty with their power to remove books from libraries, so on and so forth. And they had a big push and got a lot of support from Republicans to start running for school boards and so on and so forth. But apparently that didn't work out so well. Apparently they didn't win. I don't think they won anything. Can you think of one political office that they might have won? I'm going to look it up real quick.
I can't think of
one. I can't think of anything.
I know they've been since, I think, 22, they've been suffering huge losses despite pouring money into candidates.
Well, not just that, though. They also had, if I'm not mistaken, and again, I could be wrong, because this is all off the top of my head. I mean, we literally, this was just brief conversation before we went live.
Well, that one story, there were 5 seats open on a school board, and that's what they usually try to target, school boards.
Yeah, because that's going to be a lot easier to get.
Lost them all. You know, lost them all.
So it was a group, a right-wing advocacy group was born in Florida as a response to COVID-19 school closures and mask mandates.
Well, in the Pennsylvania one, they were opposed to the COVID-19 restrictions in schools and trying to ban CRT from being taught, even though CRT is not being taught in Pennsylvania.
I don't think anyone fully that was like against CRT. I don't think they fully understood what it was. And again, maybe I'm wrong. I'm just some guy with a fucking microphone. So the fuck do I know? But where they really fell into some problems was the Florida. I guess Florida was where it was founded. Moms for Liberty was co-founded in Florida on January 1st, 2021 by former school board member Tina Desovich and Tiffany Justice. And oh, that's an interesting. Oh, Tiffany Justice. Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Really? What's your real name?
Okay, so it was Tina Deskovich and Tiffany Justice, and then and by then current school board member Bridget Ziegler, the wife of Florida Republican Party chairman Christian Ziegler. Those are the two that got into trouble. Apparently
you're in trouble.
Well, apparently they're
banging donkeys.
If only. Turns out they were having threesomes. Okay.
With a donkey?
No donkey. Not even a midget. Or I'm sorry, a little person. In the spring of 2021, Ziegler had left the organization. Republican activist and campaign consultant Marie Rogerson is the third leading member of Moms for Liberty. But where's the story? So essentially, they kind of were bullying their way into school board meetings en masse by getting these people to join. And then they would get the entire group, 200 people to show up at a school board meeting and mm-hmm. argue against, whatever, COVID restrictions, book bans, blah, blah, blah. Critical race theory. After the news, or after they lost about a ton of seats that they were running for, I think they lost every one of them. It was every single one, wasn't it? After that happened, and I don't remember, and I can't see it real quick here, but I don't remember if the scandal came out before the elections or after the elections.
It's usually right afterwards. Look what these people were doing.
Well, here, let's do a quick search and see if we can find out. So, Bridget Ziegler. And her husband, Christian Ziegler. Again, I love it when your name's Christian and you get into some sort of threesome situation. A Sarasota police investigation following an following an accusation of rape and sexual assault against Christian Ziegler that was filed during October 2023 by a member of a threesome that included both Zieglers was reported by media across the country on November 30th. When questioned, Bridget Ziegler admitted to the threesome sexual relationship involving her and her husband and another woman. On December 22nd, news reports stated that police had recovered a sex tape of Ziegler and an unnamed woman. On January 19, the Sarasota police said that they had closed their investigation of sexual assault charges against Christian, but the charge of having made a video of their sexual encounter without permission from his sexual partner remained. So essentially, it sounds like he got off on the sexual assault and rape charge, but they're still saying, A, you didn't have permission to make that videotape. The details included a statement by her husband that contradicted her assertion of only one threesome with the woman who filed the complaint and that the woman appeared on a list of women he and
hey, it was just a list.
That's what he called it. He called it the list. I had to take a second because I wanted to make sure I didn't misrepresent it. But the woman appeared on a list of women he entitled on his phone as the list. And again, I hate to break it to you. If you think for one moment I'm going to criticize them for having a threesome, I am not. If you think I'm going to criticize him for having the list, I'm not. I don't care what you do with your personal life. As a politician or somebody that's active in politics in any way, shape, or form, whether it's her with Moms for Liberty or I don't even care, you know, like who it is. It could be, you know, a school board member. As long as everyone who's involved is agreeing to this, good on you, man. Have at it. You know, enjoy yourself. You got one life to live. You never know when you're going to step off the curb and get hit by a bus. Fucking, you know, explore who you are as a person. Explore your sexuality as long as everyone's on board, okay? And sometimes you think they're on board and they're not on board and mistakes can be made. And I'm willing to give a little bit of leeway for that too. You know what I mean? What I'm not willing to do is have people who come across or try to come across as they are better than everyone else when they're doing the same things that everyone else is doing. So don't get shitty and think that, you know, you're going to be able to get away with any of these things and not be held to a different standard because of the standard that you're trying to set. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
That's the thing is it wouldn't be a big deal if you weren't trying to set that standard, you know? And I get it. Again, you know, I absolutely think that parents should be involved in school board meetings and curriculum but you need to know something about it before you just, you know, go in there. I don't think that you can charge into any environment, whether it's a, you know, a town hall meeting or a school board meeting or anything, and start spouting off what your opinions are if you don't know the full story. If you don't at least take the time to try to go, well, wait a minute, let me consider the other side of this, okay? As I've said, are there books that should be age appropriate? There are. But if your kid's got a phone, and you're not monitoring that phone more than your local library or your school library, if you're not monitoring their online presence and their social media and their web history searches, you may not like what you see. You probably won't like what you see, okay? But that opens up an opportunity for you to have a conversation with your kid on it, first off. And if you can't control that, why do you think you can control everyone else's children when it comes to what books they're allowed to read? That's where I have the problem. And that, and even with the CRT, okay, look, again, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to give you everything in your argument. But can you explain it to me? Can you explain to me what you know to be factually true that's being taught that falls under CRT? You got to be able to do that first. And if you can't do that, if you can't show evidence of that, then maybe sit down, shut the fuck up. And again, that's my, you know, my opinion. I saw this guy, he was talking, he was, again, it was like one of these meetings, and Ziegler, I think it was her. Anyways, this guy came right out and he said, he goes, look, I'm not saying that you need to step down because of having a threesome. I'm saying you need to step down because you don't know what you're talking about, and you're creating false narratives and creating a problem where it doesn't exist. And right. And that to me is one of the biggest problems right now on the conservative side is, and as we've discussed at length, there are problems being brought up that aren't problems. They may be symptoms. They may be symptoms that need to be looked at.
They may be misdirection.
They may be misdirection. But until you actually do the deep dive, you might want to sit down and shut the fuck up when it comes to the school board meeting or the town hall or anything, really. You need to be able to look at both sides of these issues and go, okay, well, how much can I empathize with the position that you're bringing forward? And how much of that can I agree with you on before I start rebutting you? You're going to get further in the conversation. You're actually going to have a conversation. But that's not what things are about nowadays. It seems like what they're about is having somebody film you while you go up and you make a speech at a school board meeting so that you can try to dunk on or get views. Everything is about how much internet traffic can I create for my social media platform, whatever it is. Because people do make money on it, and they're trying to be influencers. But the thing is that you can't be a leader if no one's following you.
There's also the people who get paid to wear a shirt to a town hall meeting, a student board, board of education meeting.
Right.
You hear about those where like, I don't even know if this is, I was paid $20 to put the shirt on and sit here.
And again.
It happens.
It happens. But see, the thing is that we are in this time, at least in this country, it seems.
It seems like one side is following the traditional old school might is right.
Well, I think it goes beyond that. I think it goes beyond that. I think actually what it is that for as bad as we're divided, okay, in general, everything's better than it's ever been. Specifically in this country. You know what I mean? Like, would you rather live today in 2024 or would you rather live in 1924? And when I say that, I'm saying that from the point of view of the metrics. You know, what are you comparing?
I can think of a few females who would say that there's no difference at the moment.
You know what? And in many ways, they would be right. Okay. I think a lot of things that people don't realize when it comes to social issues and as far as like equal rights and freedoms, they're only looking through their particular lens, whether that's a white male, middle-aged. You know, I mean, obviously I cannot, you know, I'm a white middle-aged man. Okay? That's the only view that I can honestly experience the world in, through. But that doesn't mean that I can't be observant, and it doesn't mean that I can't be empathetic. Okay?
I can think of several women who would say that in the last year they've been kind of reduced to second-class citizens.
Because of Roe v. Wade being overturned.
Because of Roe v. Wade. There's other things that are being questioned. There's a representative out of Texas who wondered if the vote should be taken away from women.
Out loud he said that?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Good luck on your reelection, motherfucker.
And... it does reduce a female to a second class citizen. I think also if, you know, want to take away Roe versus Wade, okay. But maybe also take away boner pills.
Well, when it comes
maybe a better answer would be when a male is born, they have a vasectomy.
See, I'm not about that, okay?
And when they are ready for a family,
first. Yeah.
How many males are going to sign up for that?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. So I don't think that that's the solution. I don't think that that's the solution. I think...
No, it's an extreme swing.
Well, but
make a point.
Okay, so with that in mind, and I again, this is not going to be new to you, but it will be to our listeners... I would argue a different way. Okay. I would argue that from age 18 until age of retirement, so we'll call it 65, 67, let's take it to 70. Okay. Mm-hmm. So from 18 to 70, the average child support payment's like $5,500 a year. Okay. That's kind of like a national average, roughly. All right. So from 18 to 70, if you've got swimmers and you haven't had a vasectomy, that's your tax. Okay. Now you're talking billions of dollars a year that you could actually use to fund the programs, fund the single mothers who are keeping the children, fund the children so that they have roofs over their head, clothes on their back. And I guarantee you, a couple things will happen. One, when men have no choice but to pay this, you know, basically pregnancy tax, there's going to be a big change in the male view on abortion. But I don't think that right now, you know, I get it, you know, the argument being, well, men and women are different. So unfortunately for you women, you can get pregnant. So we're going to have charge over that. We're going to control that because we don't want you, quote unquote, murdering babies. And I even, like I said, even if I give you the argument of life creates at the moment of conception, okay, well, then if that's the case, so does child support. So does a lot of things. Now, if you can't enforce that, which they cannot, then you have no choice then but to put something like a $5,500, you know, anywhere from $5,000 to $6,000 a year tax on every man that has the ability to get a woman pregnant, every fertile man. So anyways, I said, in my opinion, if you're going to create legislation that affects half the population based solely on the fact of them being able to get pregnant, there needs to be fairness in that. And the only thing that I think... is fair, because, you know, you can't legislate, okay, you can't legislate the fact that you have to get a vasectomy. You know what I mean? Like, that's never going to happen. But you can make sure that from age 18 all the way to 70, you've got some skin in the game. And the only skin that makes sense is if you're going to force these women to have these children, there should be some sort of, so that law affects all those women, an equal amount of men should have skin in the game, you know? And even if you know, like, I've had that conversation with some people and they're like, well, that's not exactly fair because, you know, women, they'll go through the change and then, you know, in their late 40s, you know, mid 50s. Well, wait a minute. That's just nature. And you're legislating just on nature. Well, the guy can continue.
And he never stops.
He never stops. He never stops being able to impregnate. Okay. And the only reason I'd give age of retirement, essentially, as a backdrop, all right, what is it now? Is it 65 or is it 67 in the U.S.? I think it's still 65.
But I don't know.
Okay, I think it's still 65. But I know there's been talk about making it 67. So from the moment you can put them in the military to the time you pull them off the line, I think that's fair. You know, I think that that's totally fair. And all that money goes to support programs, you know, but again, there's no simple solution to it. You know, like I said, I can empathize with the people who think that you're just killing babies. I'll empathize with you. I'll even give you that. But there's
full retirement age is 66 if you were born from 43 to 1954. The full retirement age increases gradually if you were born from 55 to 60 until it reaches 67. For anyone born 1960 or later, full retirement benefits are payable at age 67.
Okay, so you and I both will get full retirement benefits at 67 from what you're saying, right?
Yes. Well, if you are to believe that you can never.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that's it's adorable. Who's retiring anymore? I mean, no one really retires anymore. They you know, they may stop working at that particular job, but at some point they pick up something else that they're doing, even if it's silly. You know, welcome to Walmart. Here's your cart. You know, supplementing income nowadays. I mean, how many times have you walked into a grocery store or gone through a drive-thru and seen somebody that? You're thinking, my God, Grandma, go sit down, rock for a while, and knit something, instead of taking orders through a drive-thru. You know,
sitting in front of a Walmart, a door greeter.
Yeah, or a door greeter, or any
of
those things.
They're gonna stop me from stealing something.
And mind you, I encourage people to continue.
Not that I steal anything.
Not you, no. But I think, you know, a lot of societies around the world, they encourage the elderly to continue working, even if it's only part-time, just so that they have purpose, so that they feel like they're, you know, there's a reason to get up and get out of bed in the morning. I think that that's important, too. So I don't mind it when it's one of those things where you're looking at the person, you're going, well, clearly you're doing this because you just want to be active and participate. But I don't think the people who don't want to be active and participate after they put their, you know, their time in should have to. And again, it goes back to when you're going to legislate what the rules are. And mind you, it's state by state still. But when you're going to do that for, let's say Texas is an example, you're going to put into play an anti-abortion legislation with essentially no real options of, I believe they just shut down. I don't want to speak out of turn on this because I'm not positive on Texas, but I know that there was that big case where the lady was, it was Her doctor had clearly said that this is not only important.
Nectopic.
What's that?
Nectopic.
It might have been. I don't know. It was a big case in Texas. And she went to the court and went and with, you know, doctors, with her doctor's description of what was going on and the fact that if she didn't have the abortion, it may not only would it result in the child not being born, or if born, not living very long, and it would also affect her ability to have children in the future. Now, this was a woman who wanted to have this child. This is a woman who wanted to be pregnant. And those circumstances just weren't right. Okay? She ended up going out of state. But basically, it was the attorney general in the state of Texas is like, no, you're not getting it.
Ben Paxton.
Yep, Paxton.
Who's a piece of shit.
Paxton, he's like, nope, you can't do that. Okay, so now a politician is overriding her doctors, and if I'm not mistaken, other doctors chimed in and like, no, this is on point. This is an example of when you would want to do this, mm-hmm. even as somebody who's totally pro-life, because what you're going to do is you're not only going to lose the life of the baby very, very quickly, if not at birth, but on top of that, you're risking the mother's life. And if the mother makes it through, you're also in a situation of she may not be able to have children in the future, which is the very thing Correct. That you want her to do in the first place. Okay. And I got to tell you, like the arguments that I've been listening to, the descriptions that I've been reading on all these things, the social media that I've been seeing, a lot of people are very, very pro-birth. And that's where it stops. It's just where it stops.
And you ever think the pro-birth movement is a direct reaction to all of the Muslim births?
I don't know. I have no idea. Is there like a huge influx of Muslim births now?
Oh yeah, there has been. They
I was not aware.
Christians. So there's a part of me that feels like the conservative Christian movement to try to balance it out.
Well, again, I think, you know, at the end of the day, you cannot look at the birth rates globally and not understand that there's going to be a lot of countries like China and Japan specifically that are going to be running into some big fucking problems really, really soon, where the societal structure could collapse, you know. If you have way more people who are either retired or unable to work because of age, just elderly in general. So let's just go from 65, which I honestly don't think 65 is that old anymore. I used to, but I also used to look at pictures of grandma and grandpa and think that they were 70 and they were 40. You know what I mean? So like there's a difference in...
Well, I was going to say you're going to hit that retirement age in probably 5 years.
No, a little bit longer than that, buddy. A little bit longer than that.
Yes. Shots fired.
Ow, that hurt. But with that being said, you know, look at I would challenge anyone who was born in the 70s and 80s to look at pictures of their aunts, uncles, grandparents, etc. And look and find, if you can, what age they were in certain pictures, right? Mm-hmm. So like one of the things when we cleaned out the house, for those who don't know, and I'm sure you'll hear this a million times on this podcast, but the reason for the podcast was our mother died, and our mother always wanted us to do something together creatively. She thought it, she loved when me and you would banter back and forth. She loved the way that we related.
As long as it wasn't fighting.
Yeah, as long as we weren't fighting. I mean, even as kids, she used to really just crack up when me and you would start going back and forth and just kind of busting chops. She always, you know, she always found it entertaining and funny, and for some reason she found it endearing. But she loved when specifically later in life, She was very, very politically motivated, and very, very opinionated when it came to politics. And that's the environment that we grew up in. And so she would love to have these debates about these different things. But I think the only thing that made it more fun for her, because like I know you would have these discussions with her. I had many discussions with her when it came to politics. But the only thing that made it more fun for her was when she was listening to you and me talk about a topic. You know, on those yeah. very few occasions, especially later in life, where we were able to be in the same room and have the same, you know, have a conversation and debate back and forth, even if we were on the same side of it and just kind of, you know, exploring it, she really did get a kick out of it. And that's where this was, you know, once she died and we had to clean out the house and sell the house and do all that, in the course of doing all that, that's where Elsie's little pickles kind of came out of was... You and I were, again, on a daily basis having these deep conversations and ridiculous conversations and silly conversations. And so we decided that we'd give this a shot. But in going through...
I lovingly remember you showing me a picture of, you know, grandma and grandpa. In the you know, here's a picture of grandma and grandpa. They were actually only 17 there.
Right, and they looked
clearly
like
they're, you know,
they were only 17, but in that picture, did they or did they not look like they were 40?
Yeah,
and that was the case across the board. So, like, as we were going through all the pictures, as we were going through all the possessions, and as we're trying to organize everything out, you do tend to get stuck looking at certain things, and pictures were one of them, especially if they were pictures like you know of people that you. Did have in your life on the regular. So there were several pictures like of our aunt and our uncle, and you see them at 25, you see them at 35 or 45, and you see this progression. And it was like reverse archaeology because you start off with all the pictures and they're all like recent and old and how you remember them. And then as you go deeper through the layers, you start to see them aging backwards. And then you start to realize where you were in their lives at that age and what age you were and how even then you looked at them like they were these monolithic elderly people in a way. Like even when they were in their 40s, 30s and 40s, it's like to us, they were still old. But if you look at a picture comparatively of somebody today, and compare them, same age, it doesn't look the same. Now, that may be just perception. That just may be a child's perception. But I've noticed this in many different circumstances where it's like, I just don't think people are aging in the same way. I don't know if that's because we got better medical help. I don't know if that's because...
All of the above.
Yeah, it's got to be all of the above. You know,
as I mentioned in the other day when we were talking, I looked up a picture of Joseph McCarthy, who died at the age of 48, which is my age now, but he looked like he was in his 60s.
Yeah, crazy, yeah. Absolutely crazy. And maybe it was just, you know, that was the style of the time to try to look as elderly as you possibly could when you were younger. So maybe you were taken a little bit more seriously. I honestly don't know. But what I do know is,
Wilford Brimley.
Oh,
that's
see?
Another
yeah.
case. Wilford Brimley.
I thought he was 100 playing, for 100 years.
he did the movie Cocoon and he was like 44.
How old was Carol O'Connor when he did, Archie Bunker?
Oh yeah.
He was like
was in his late 30s.
Late 30s, early 40s. He was like 42, yeah. I think, when they did that. And if you looked at Carol O'Connor in the first season of All in the Family, he looked as old as Grandpa Brewer did when he died. I mean, like there wasn't much difference in you like you're not going to an amusement park where they you know, guess my weight, guess my age. You're not getting that one. You're just not going to get that one, okay? You got to hand over the little plush stuffed animal and let them be on their way because you're not going to guess. When you're talking a 30-year swing, in actual age. And it could go either way. You know what I mean? For either of them. You know, like one of these guys is 72 and one of them's 42. And you're looking at them going,
You are not going to be familiar with this person, but it's been a long-standing joke that Arn Anderson came out of the womb as a 42-year-old. He's a pro wrestler.
Oh, okay.
He's always looked like he was in his 40s.
And some people just do.
Early 20s.
Yeah, I mean, look, you looked like you were in your mid-20s to early 30s when you were 15.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
It was a beard.
It was the beard. Yeah, I mean, but it wasn't just like, oh, he's got a cute little beard. He's trying. It was like a full man, like lumberjack.
There was a time that I showed up for baseball tryouts as a senior in high school. And for the first hour, the underclassmen thought that I was the coach. So I made them run laps.
Ah! Yeah.
And when the coach did arrive and walked up to me because I was busting people's balls while they were running, and I did not know what the coach looked like, but he showed up and was like, "Did you do this?" And I was like, "Yep, I cannot tell a lie." And he's like, "Oh, just let them keep going. That's on them for not knowing who the coach is."
But it makes you wonder because, you know, like there's this idea that the older generations were tougher. And I think they were in many ways. I think they were more messed up, too. I think that there was a lot of undiagnosed depression, a lot of undiagnosed anxiety, a lot of undiagnosed bipolarism, all of that. I think that, but that's also because they grew up in far more difficult times. You know what I mean? Like, you don't even think about the idea of having indoor plumbing. Like, that's not something that we question.
We had to walk to school uphill in the snow both ways. I had newspapers as shoes.
But while we heard those stories, there were also true stories. Like, you know, mom grew up poor. You know, dad didn't grow up much richer. But dad had indoor plumbing and mom did not. She grew up without houses. She grew up having to, you know, like if you had to take a leak or take a shit in the middle of the night and it was wintertime, you had to bundle up and go out there and sit on that cold ass wood, you know, and do your business.
She used to say she would have to look for the piss pot.
Right. So they would utilize that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But like even like, I'll give you an example. All right. So, and I've used this before, but everyone lost their minds trying to get toilet paper during the pandemic. Mom didn't. So
apparently everybody had to shit.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing.
You got COVID, you had to shit.
Mom didn't have toilet paper.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they didn't have it. It just wasn't. That was a luxury they couldn't afford. You know, so like, everyone who did it prior to them, you know, it was corn cobs or it was Sears catalog or it was the daily paper. That, I don't care who you are, that's got to fuck with you a little bit. You know what I mean? So like when you think about it, you know what I mean? Like I'm going to use a pine cone or a fucking old corn cob to wipe my ass.
Here's some leaves.
Yeah. Whatever they had available, that was what they used. You know, now you could, to a listener, they could go, "Oh, that, you know, your mom must have been ancient." And I'll tell you with another person who grew up. And you know what? I'm going to look up real quick how old he is.
I had a coworker who was your age, and she would tell me, growing up in Mexico, she walked with her dad every single day, 2.7 miles to get water because they didn't have plumbing.
Right.
They didn't have water inside.
All right. So like Billy Ray Cyrus. 62 years old. He grew up without indoor plumbing. Had an outhouse. How far has this motherfucker come? Whether you like him or you don't, whether you like Miley or you don't, the bottom line is this dude went from not having indoor plumbing and having to use an outhouse to being a very successful recording star and very successful businessman. And that's what the American dream is about. But here's the question.
Think of it.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to say, you know, I also have to think about our grandparents' generation and the changes that happened, you know, horses to trains,
right,
buggies to cars. All of a sudden, there's airplanes. People used to dress up to get on an airplane.
Right.
Because it was something special.
It was. I mean, that was a big deal.
Transition.
Well, I guess that's kind of my point with this question is if we're looking at somebody who is 10 years older than me, Billy Ray Cyrus, right?
Yep.
10 years older than me, growing up in those circumstances, that means that potentially, depending on where I was born and under what circumstances I was born, I could have grown up in the same type of circumstance. But that to you and me seems like as foreign of a concept as manual windows seem to somebody that's 20 years old. Like, you wanna watch a fucking kid's head explode? Put a 20-year-old in a car with manual windows and see how long it takes him to figure it out.
I had a pickup truck that was a manual transmission. And I took it in to get an oil change. And out of 7 people there, none of them knew how to drive a manual. The owner had to come out and drive my truck in. And we laughed about it. Because they were all 17 to 22-year-old kids.
Right.
And none of them knew how to drive a manual.
All right. So let's look at this a little different then.
Mm-hmm.
What convenience, because that's all these things are. These are all conveniences, right? You don't
give
need
me convenience or give me death.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's a t-shirt. That's going to be an Elsie's Little Pickles t-shirt. Give me convenience or give me death.
You may take away my life, but you'll never take my internet porn.
So think about that, because I believe after what I witnessed during the pandemic that there and moving forward, even whether you're talking about tribalism in politics, whether you're talking about the pandemic, it doesn't matter what you're talking about. You could be talking about, a bad snowstorm coming and watch how quickly those shelves clear off. You know, if you got a...
You should see it in Texas.
In what sense?
It is a ghost town. Storms coming, like a hint of it, early in the week. Everybody, every day, is stocking up. Shelves will be empty.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is like, if some shit were to actually go down, the stores don't last 3 days, you know? But I guess my question is, of the modern day conveniences, what one would you be willing or do you think would be easiest to give up?
Honestly, probably plumbing.
Now, why do you say that?
For me, it would be plumbing.
Well, yeah, but I'm talking about not living in the RV. I'm talking about living.
Yeah, in a house.
In a house.
I judge everything by a house, even though I'm in an RV. I say that because where we are at, out here in the mountains of Vermont, every place is basically septic. A private well and septic.
Right. And where I am, I'm private well and septic.
And understanding, there is no plumbing and, plumbing for some reason disappeared. Running water for cities stopped. You would see more septic and a private well. The technology to do that is not very, well, modern.
No, but it is expensive to have a well dug.
It can be, unless you know how to do it.
Well, even if you know how to do it, you can have miss digs.
Yeah, but you're talking about a crapper.
Okay, so if we're only talking about outdoor plumbing, meaning having an outhouse and not being able to go to the bathroom in your house, mm-hmm. I don't think that that's something that would devastate people if it was just that. But if you had to go and collect water, well, that's a different ballgame.
That would be regional.
You know what I mean? And
this area,
not just regional. It wouldn't just be regional. It would be a very specific to where you're located. So as an example, if you live near a stream, no big deal. If you've got water running through your property, no big deal. But if you don't, and you're essentially dry landlocked, and you're talking miles to even get to the closest right. stream, then yeah, it becomes an issue.
Ooh, you stinky motherfucker.
But what if it got more critical? I mean, I don't think people living without indoor plumbing, even without running water, okay, I don't think that becomes as big of a deal in contrast to people not having access to the internet. I think, honestly, people would freak out more about not having internet access than they would about not being able to take a dump in the privacy of their own home. And I will use as an example every fucking festival that uses outhouses.
They just poop in the dirt.
Yeah, I mean, but I do think that people would freak out if the internet got shut off, or if there was a disruption for an extended period of time. You know, like all of a sudden there's.
Yeah, I differ from you because I've known people. I know people that are so tech savvy.
Yeah, and you also know people
they would
that
have
are
internet
so shady.
48 hours.
You know,
48
of,
hours.
Some of the shadiest motherfuckers.
They would have internet backup for multiple people in 48 hours, and would be actively shutting down the government. Whether it's phone lines, the guy that I knew that made his own satellite.
Yeah, that one really is crazy. But I guess my point is that may work individually. But when you're talking an entire country, getting everybody the ability that had online access back online, that may be a different thing. You know what I mean? So let's say,
that
for
would
example,
take longer, but...
And you're a little bit more tech savvy on this shit than I am. But let's say that there was concerted effort by China and Russia to attack our infrastructure via online. Okay, and I'm mm-hmm. not saying that they would, but I'm using that as an example. Okay,
it does go on.
Well, it does go on, but the fact of the matter is that. Currently, I would say it's safe to say that any hidden viruses that are in any American system, American government system, are also in one form or another in Russia's systems placed there by America or in China's systems placed there by America. But what I'm talking about is, let's say something massive happened. Let's say there was a meteor shower. And it took out 90% of the satellites that handle GPS, they handle internet, they handle all these different communications. I think that removing the ability to communicate in whatever form or fashion, and I'm saying it through the internet, but you could also say through cellular, you could say it through landline, you could say it all these different ways. Just removing communication for an extended period of time. And let's call that extended period of time a very short extended period of time. Let's say it's 6 months.
Well, with communications, again, you would see an uptick from an already, you know, underground. I don't even want to say underground, but there's a lot of shortwave radio and ham radio users out there. And I don't know if you're familiar with those.
I'm really not. I know they exist. I know the concept behind them, but
like ham radio, you can contact throughout the world.
Well, even with that though, okay, there's a big difference between being on a ham radio and doing a Google search or being on any social media. You know what I mean? We're talking about people who at this point in time.
People are going to have to go back and they'll crack open those encyclopedias.
Well, yeah, that ain't going to happen. You know that? They stopped teaching people how to read. So, what I'm talking about is some sort of, all right, so let's pivot, okay, from communication. Let's say that some form of global EMP happens, and it's based on, and I don't even know if this is possible, so I'm totally shooting this out
like
of my
a solar
ass.
Flare?
Let's say it's a solar flare, okay? Huge, huge solar flare. And the EMP destroys the electrical grid, not only taking the electrical grid with it, but by very definition, taking all electronics with it. Because if I'm not mistaken, and tell me if I'm wrong, again, this is more your area, but an EMP destroys the electronics. Like, once it's happened, you're not getting those back.
I would say technology 20 years ago would be very susceptible. Nowadays, they build it so that
could go either way.
It'll withstand that. Yeah.
Okay, but now you're in a circumstance because it did take down the grid that for however long it takes to get the electrical grid back up, not just back up, but also improved. Because once you're in there, I mean, look, the electrical grid in this fucking country is ancient at this point. So you, if you're going to have to, remove and replace a lot of stuff, you might as well improve a lot of stuff as well. What, how long before people lost their shit with that? Because now you don't have electricity. And you, specifically, because of what you went through in Texas, when the electrical grid went down in Texas, your whole house got fucked up and flooded out because it was winter.
Yep.
And you were out of power in the house for how long?
Out of power in the house for 4 or 5 days.
But the damage done from that 1 or 2 days, the first 2 days is where all the damage happened, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, the pipes froze.
Okay. But that was within the first couple of days.
Yes.
And then the destruction. And this is my point. You would have the initial thing, and while actually getting what caused the problem fixed might happen quickly, what doesn't happen is the fallout getting cleaned up quickly. Okay? So a tornado can come through and be done in a matter of 10 minutes, but the destruction and cleanup and cost and effects it has on business, the effects it has on that particular local economy, the effects that it has on those particular businesses, that goes on for a long, long fucking time.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my point. Like, what do you think would be the thing that it may be small, but the impact would be huge? You know what I mean? Would that be losing the electrical grid? Would that be losing, let's say, sewage? Let's say they shut down just sewage treatment plants. And it took...
Well, there would be a lot of problems that would... the real problem would be stockpiling, or not stockpiling, but few layers of problems. This little problem, then this little problem.
It becomes an onion.
This little problem.
That's what I'm saying, is it becomes an onion. It becomes an onion with infinite layers of issues that fall from it.
It makes you cry.
You know what else has layers? A parfait. Parfait. Everybody loves a parfait.
Oh, Lordy.
So I don't think, though, that, like, as an example, if we lost internet, if you and I lost internet, we grew up in the 80s and 90s before the internet, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. It would suck. It would be inconvenient. And we would know that eventually it was coming back. But even if it was only for a week, like, if you took the internet and it was down for natural disaster, an attack from another country, solar flare, whatever.
I'm gonna go outside and ride my bike.
That's what we would do. That's exactly what we would do. But I don't.
I'm gonna read a book.
But just like you and I can't imagine not having a home throne, right? An indoor bathroom.
Oh my God! What am I gonna do? I can't look at boobs on demand.
There's gonna be people that, like, literally crawl out of their. Come on, think about that. Even if it was just for a week, there's going to be dudes that are crawling out of their mother's basements, seeing sunlight for the first fucking time in a long time, right?
Meet dealers on corners. Hey, man, I got your marijuana here. I got a little bit of crack and a Sears catalog.
Yeah, you go with that Sears catalog. Boy, I knew you were going to take that instead of the other stuff. But...
You got the money. I got a Victoria's Secret.
He's just wearing a long raincoat with a bunch of pockets that keeps opening up to one side or the other. But I honestly wonder, because to you and me, not having indoor plumbing, not having a home throne in a heated environment in the wintertime, in a cooled environment in the summertime, that is as foreign to you and me as people that were born from, what, 95, 98 on, not having internet access. I mean, these are kids that grew up with the internet. These are people that everything, they don't retain as much knowledge because they have it at their fingertips. And it's not, that's not a slam on them. I think that's great. You know what I mean? Like, I love the idea that I literally, in my pocket, have something that gives me access to the whole world of knowledge. If I've got the time and patience to keep digging, I will find whatever answer to whatever question I have.
There's more processing power right there in your hand than what they used to send the people to the moon.
Exactly. 69. Okay, so when you take this incredibly powerful phone, which is essentially a mega computer prior to 2010, okay? So prior to 2010, the idea of, what was it, 07, I think, was when the first iPhone came out, was it?
I couldn't tell you. I don't know anything about old technology like iPhones.
Okay, so just for the sake of argument, let's call it 07.
My own little slam on iPhones.
Let's call it 07, okay? Because that was when... Essentially, you were being given the opportunity to carry a laptop, computer processing skill, or a set. You were essentially taking a laptop and just putting it in your pocket. That's fucking amazing under any circumstance.
I heard a story from one Chris Jericho, a very famous wrestler, who has a podcast, and he was describing being, he was on a contract in Japan, late 90s, and he was at a gig, you know, wrestling, and one of the people there in Japan pulled out their cell phone and took a picture of him and was like, "What is that?" And the person was like, "Oh, it's my cell phone. It has a camera." And he was like, "It was the first time I'd ever seen a cell phone that had a camera."
Right.
And just how amazing that was. And that didn't become a thing in the States for you know, 5-6 years later.
Well, it dropped iPhone. The first iPhone dropped June 29, 2007.
Oh, wow, look at that.
Okay. So now what we're looking at is in a very short period of time, 17 years, we have more computing power, more camera strength, video, all these different things that come with, that we take for granted with any phone, any cell phone that we buy. Even when you get into, I mean, like even the idea of just a flip phone, being able to carry a phone in your pocket. I remember in the mid to late 90s, that was like, it was a game changer. You know what I mean? That was like incredible. I mean, we were thrilled with beepers, if you remember. But now, take that away. So you're talking, take away.
Beepers.
What's that?
I said,
yeah, you used to love your beeper.
I was a busy guy.
I know you were. So if all we do is look at it from, let's call it 24 years, 25 years. The kids that were born in 99 and in 2000, 2001, by the time, you know, some of them were 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, all of a sudden they're able to walk around with this incredible machine in their hand. Take yep. that away. I think people would freak the fuck out, even if it was only for a week. I think if people honestly had to go without internet access and without their cell phones or computer access or anything, like all modern computers, phones, tablets, all that, for 1 week, I think people would be losing their fucking mind. And I think
that, I could see that.
I think they'd lose their mind more and quicker on that than if they lost water, if they lost flights, you know, like air flights. I don't even know how long air travel was shut down for after 9/11, but people were pretty okay with that idea. And they knew it would come back.
We lived in the path of the airport in Texas. And during the pandemic, I don't know if you remember that, flights were shut down for, I think, 30 or 60 days. And it was pinpoint quiet all the time.
Yeah.
And then when flights came back, we noticed it. It was because a flight would fly over every 15 minutes. And so it started up and you're like, ah, crap.
Yeah. But again, though, I think that that's my point. Like things that you would think were essential, like air travel, which is essential, especially for a lot of business.
Yep.
It's essential for, you know, commerce. I mean, you don't even have to be doing passengers. You still had, you know, even with the freight flights, they were minimal in comparison. You know, you saw how much people freaked out when they couldn't get their Amazon order quick enough, or it was on back order because, you know, the ship that was bringing it in was stuck out at sea for 30 days. I don't know what one would be worse. I'm not sure. You know what I mean? Like, I think, honestly, I think if people had the choice between, even if it was only for...
What? My 2-day shipping is 5 days? What the hell? I'm going crazy.
Yeah, they fucking did. But that's why I wonder, if everything went to shit, what would be the thing that would really bother people the most? And I think even if it was a short period of time, even if it was, you know, 48 hours, 72 hours, let's call it 7 to 10 days, 2 weeks without internet access or being able to get on their computer or get on their iPhone, I think that would send people fucking nuts. I think that would send them off the edge. I think that would be the thing that would, and I honestly think it's because we're so conditioned, specifically through our social medias. Okay, whether no matter what social media sites you go to or utilize, I think even if it's just YouTube, think about that. How many times through the course of a day do you pull up your phone and you're just bored for a second and you go look at a YouTube video? I don't think people know how to be alone with their thoughts.
Not my thoughts.
And not my thoughts. Anything but my thoughts.
Not my thoughts. I don't know how to be alone with my thoughts. Me, myself, and I.
Yeah.
It's not so easy because I can't stand myself.
Well, I think that if given the opportunity, I would be very happy to be unplugged from anything for a week, from everything. I don't know about you.
You know, I, during the pandemic, again, the closest to that, I wish I could have been unplugged from everything.
Oh God, me too.
And I always hear people complain about it, and it's like, you don't know how good you had it. I would have loved.
Especially like when they first did the lockdown, right? There was about 2 or 3 weeks in those first 2 or 3 weeks where it was so quiet. There was so little traffic. And then you saw after that, like the news reports were like, holy shit, these animals are kind of coming back into the city. Like you'd see fucking a bobcat in a fucking big city or some shit. And I was like, that's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Why can't we let that be, you know?
At my work, I would escort the ladies out to get rid of the trash because we kept getting coyotes because nobody's been around.
Yeah. I got to imagine that happened in a lot of places. I know that the coyote population exploded for a period of time during the shutdown. Or at least it exploded in its presence, if not in its population. You saw that with bobcats. You saw that with coyotes. You saw that with fucking raccoons. You know,
yeah.
They're like, holy shit, this is like fucking heaven. It's a buffet. The dumpsters are everywhere and no one else is around. Let's go.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I
really wish I could have had some time off. That would have been a lot of fun, to be honest.
Well, yeah. I wish I could have too, but you know.
Spend the first week just watching TV. Second week, get a little organized, clean the house, go back to school, do something. That would have been nice.
Well, I mean, you saw that happening with a lot of people. A lot of people actually did take the opportunity to re-educate themselves, to find a new hobby or passion or start a new business or any number of things. I think there were a lot of good things that did come out of it. A lot of bad things came out of it, but a lot of good things came out of it too. And you see that with a lot of people who never went back to their pre-pandemic job. I don't know, man. Like, it just seems like everything's on fast forward since it. You know what I mean? Like, everything is a bigger issue than it really needs to be. Everything is blown out of proportion. Everything is, I mean, look, there was there was this thing on social media on Twitter X. Whatever. And if I understood it correctly, because you know, I saw it a bunch of times. But basically,
we just call it Twix.
Twix. All right. I like that.
Oh, thank you.
I'm gonna call it Twix. there were Native Americans standing in front of Mount Rushmore, flipping it off. And there were a number of people like really losing their shit over something. I thought, yeah, well, if anyone has the right to be flipping off Mount Rushmore, it's probably the Native Americans, right? But apparently this was a big deal. And I'm like, yeah, that this gets to my point. When something like that is a big deal, and maybe it was, I you could only see the picture from the back, so I don't know how old they were or anything like that. I'm not, it could have been just some fucking kids being assholes. It could have been some adults making a point. It could have been some kids making a point. It could have been any number of reasons that they were doing it. But that picture got caught, captured, and splashed all over social media. So now that's a thing. Now everyone's got an opinion on it. Who fucking cares? You know what I mean? I think it was three of them. Three of them. So three middle fingers all of a sudden sent everyone into a tizzy because, oh my God, they're flipping the bird at Mount Rushmore. A fucking rock.
Well, everybody has got an emotion. Everybody has an opinion. And they're gonna make you hear. That's the problem.
That's the problem. And that's why I say, like, to me, I would love for the internet and all of communication to shut down for a week. Like, just take a week off. Just take a week.
So now that you've mentioned Mount Rushmore, let's have a little talk.
Oh, boy. Did I step in the doo-doo?
No. This is going to be fun.
All right.
I think it would be fun to have a discussion and have you choose. In the world of sports, like, not that I watch basketball, but people will choose who's on their Mount Rushmore of basketball.
Okay.
Such as Michael Jordan, LeBron, what's his name? Larry Bird.
Yeah. Pippen.
I'm forgetting. What's that?
Well, there's Pippen, you know.
Pippen. I was thinking of the dude that slept with all the women.
Rodman?
Not Rodman. Older.
Played in the 60s and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? No. It was the one that said he slept with like 10,000 women or whatever. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, his name's escaping me. But something like that. I think it would be fun every show to have us discuss a Mount Rushmore of a certain topic.
Okay. And
today's Mount Rushmore is going to be open for discussion, and that is who is on your Mount Rushmore of singer-songwriters. And saying that, it has to be a singer who is a songwriter, not like, I love Elvis, but he never wrote a shit.
I can probably get at least three of those very quickly.
Who's on your Mount Rushmore?
Okay, so I'll give you the first three because the first three come right to mind. Okay. That would definitively be Billy Joel, Sting, and Dave Matthews.
Okay.
The fourth I would struggle with. Okay. And I would struggle with the fourth only because I would have to decide whether I wanted to go back to the late 60s, early 70s. And put somebody who maybe I'm not necessarily a huge fan of, or if I go a little bit niche, and pick somebody that is brilliant by anyone who understands music, especially. God, that's tough. Or do I just go with a logical one, which is the powerhouse of the day? Like, you look at Taylor Swift, she's a singer-songwriter and she's massive. True. I'm not interested in her music myself, but that doesn't mean she's not brilliant. You know what I mean? Like, I always tell people, when it comes to musicians, especially if you're a musician, you don't have to like another musician's music or work. But if they're huge,
be able to appreciate it, yeah.
To be able to appreciate it, yeah. You don't have to, like it to understand, its importance. Okay, that's where I would struggle with the fourth one. But
Straight off the bat, Billy Joel, I would have to probably put him on my Mount Rushmore.
Would you?
The songs that he wrote, the 70s, the 80s, they're compelling. To this day, they're fun to sing. You hear it on the radio.
Yeah.
Singing along.
Yeah, a lot of his music stood the test of time, even if it doesn't stand the test of time. So, like, you can listen to some of the older songs where he's using musical instruments that were maybe new at the time, or, you know, faded in and out in popularity or whatever, or has just a sound that is very like, oh, that's totally 70s, or that's totally 80s, or that's, you know what I mean? Like, you could do that. But if I had to... So, like I said, for me, right out of the gate, I mean, that's a, when you're talking Mount Rushmore, you're talking four. So that makes it very difficult.
Yes.
But that's also the same reason why, right out of the gate, I said Billy Joel and Sting. Those two have stood the test of time. Billy Joel, after 30 years, just released a new single, and it's fucking amazing.
See, I would not put Sting on.
Okay.
Controversy. Controversy.
No, here we go. Let's fight, motherfucker.
He's very good, but for me personally, my second spot, I only recently have really discovered the genius. I always pushed against it, you know.
You're going to go Beatles, aren't you? You're going to go Beatles.
Yeah, Paul McCartney.
All right, so that Paul McCartney.
Fucking right.
Paul McCartney. So I totally agree with you on that. So the only reason I didn't pick Paul McCartney is because you said singer-songwriter. And when I think of a singer-songwriter, I'm thinking more of like an individual artist. So while Sting was in the Police, while he was in the Police, his career after the Police has been far more prolific and successful than it was with the Police. And the Police were fucking amazing. But they didn't have the same ability for launch. What's that?
I said, yeah, he was better with the Police.
I love the Police. Don't get me wrong. I love the Police. All right. But I also can look at four albums after the Police that I can listen to all the way through easily without even thinking about it and enjoy damn near every song on them. Like, I can literally listen from beginning to end and go from Dream of the Blue Turtle to... Soul Cages on down the line, right? And I can literally listen to every track and not be horribly disappointed with any of it. It's the same thing with Billy Joel. I can listen to 99% of his music from beginning to end without much disappointment in any of it. There are songs I like more and songs I like less, and there's even a couple of songs with both of those artists I don't care for at all, but I think that that's going to be the case no matter who the artist is. Now, if we were just talking a Mount Rushmore of musicians that were singer-songwriters, yeah, the fucking Beatles, man, right out of the gate. There's no two ways about it. You know, you put their four fucking faces on Mount Rushmore, I don't think anyone can really complain too much about that as far as musicians. But I'm looking at it from the very specific, not... They wrote this as a singer-songwriter while they were in this band. So if you're doing it from that point of view, do you still hold McCartney in that?
Yes.
And see, that's where I don't know that I could agree with you.
The music he wrote in the Beatles, obviously, but it transcended past the Beatles into his solo stuff and Wings.
Okay, but again, that was with Wings. I'm talking about just his solo shit. And I don't know that
I'm still putting him in there.
I think he's a brilliant singer-songwriter. Again, I'm not really arguing it other than from the point of view of how we're defining it. Now I'm going to throw one at you. And see, so you got what? You said Billy Joel, Paul McCartney. What's your third?
I haven't gotten to a third yet.
Well, but, get your fucking moving. Get moving.
So we've got Billy Joel, we agreed with. Second place for you was Sting. For me, it was Paul McCartney. who would be your third?
My third, I said, was Dave Matthews.
That's right, Dave Matthews.
But technically, I probably, based on, because he did do that solo album, and I love the solo album, but most of his shit has been done with DMB. So I actually need to remove that as my third. And I'll even go with you with McCartney on third.
Okay. So now it's up to me for a third.
Mm-hmm.
There's, I want to put him in singer-songwriter. I don't think he wrote all of the songs, but he worked with a team. But I can't deny his talent. And again, he created melodies that, yeah, I don't know anybody that doesn't sing along when they hear them. There's actually two people this really describes for me. And one of them is Elton John.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, so Elton actually wrote the music, but Bernie Taupin wrote exactly the lyrics. I think Elton John is one of the greatest performers, greatest musicians. Absolutely adore his library of work. Like even some of the deeper cuts that don't get as much play on the radio. I love Elton John, but I would not call him a singer songwriter because okay. He's not writing his lyrics.
That's why I was a little iffy, because I know Bernie was doing the lyrics, but the melodies he would create.
Oh God. You know, I mean, it's so many that you can't even, you know, really to list them is difficult. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now here's where I'm going to throw you. All right.
Okay. Yep.
I'm going to give you my fourth, even though we're still waiting on your third. I'm going to give you this because I can see you're struggling with it. Your question and you're struggling with it.
Well, I want to come with some powerhouses. Honestly, if I can't say Elton John, I'm going to go with Mr. Mike Ness from Social Distortion. The guy is a poet, lyrically, writes good music, and every single song, he's speaking from his heart, and it's so easy to identify with what he's singing that it strikes a chord with me.
Okay,
and most people don't know him.
When you first said Michael Ness, I heard Michael Nesbitt of the Monkees.
Michael Nesbitt.
I heard the Monkees. I love the Monkees.
Hey, with the Monkees.
I love the Monkees.
Actually, one of my choices is not far off from that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Lay it on me.
In fact, he probably wrote that. If that gives you a hint.
Oh, it gives me a big fucking hint. It gives me a big fucking hint.
And I've got a folder of his on my car. You know, I've got a flash.
Neil Diamond, baby.
Neil Diamond.
Neil Diamond. That motherfucker.
Has the coolest fucking voice in the world.
That motherfucker. I don't care who you are and how much you might want to try to make fun of that, but that motherfucker can write music, he can write lyrics, and he can sing the fuck out of them.
Yes.
But for
with
as much
honorable mention, I want to bring it up because it's not something that most people would expect me to pick, but his penchant for writing and making you feel what he's writing, Mr. George Jones.
Okay. All right. And here's my dark horse candidate.
Go for it.
Gordon Lightfoot.
I actually thought about Gordon Lightfoot.
And everyone immediately thinks of The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, which is brilliant. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. There's other great songs.
Typically people think of two songs. They think of Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, again, great song. And they think of Sundown, Again, yeah. Great song. But if you want to listen to a song where you recognize that there were choices made and every one of those choices was right on the money, listen to If You Could Read My Mind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I hear that song and I immediately think of Superman.
That's not, I wasn't in Superman. That's not the song. No, but
that song, there's a song in Superman, I think Superman 2, I do believe, that reminds
me. Can you read my mind?
Yeah, can you read my mind? I always feel like I think somebody has listened to Gordon Lightfoot too many times.
But If You Could Read My Mind is such a haunting and brilliantly constructed song.
Oh, how that changes that whole scene.
Oh, shit. All right. Well, I would hope that people, when they listen to this, they can give us their top four.
I would love to hear people.
I would, too. I'd be very interested in hearing what people say.
That's kind of why I want to introduce this as an end debate, something fun, but also thought provoking and gets listeners involved.
Yeah. And if you want to send us, you can go on, you're in charge of social media. So what's the Facebook?
The Facebook is Elsie's Little Pickles. And soon there will be an actual website and emails that you can respond.
But for now, it's just Elsie's Little Pickles on Facebook.
Correct.
All right. Well, with that, hopefully everyone will drop their four singer-songwriters that they would like to see on Mount Rushmore. And until next time, peace.
Peace.
Love.
And chicken grease.
Harmony.
And you read my mind.